Chapter 27. One thing Princess Kirsten had always insisted on after ascending to the throne of the Principality of Ombé was keeping breakfast a family affair. Crises could come and go, but giving the children quality time was sacrosanct. Burley Palace, where she ruled from, was situated at the top of a gently sloping hill in the middle of Ombé's capital, Atherstone. Its preeminent location gave the royal apartments at the rear of the sprawling stone edifice a grand view over the parks, gardens, and elegant residential buildings which made up the city's eastern districts. Away in the distance was the haze-blurred line of deeper blue that was the ocean. Atherstone was only 15 degrees south of the equator, putting it firmly in a tropical climate belt, but the early morning breeze coming in off the ocean kept the temperature bearable until about 10 o'clock. So Kirsten had the servants set the table on the broad red-tiled balcony outside her bedroom, where she could sit amid the yellow and pink flowers of the aboriginal tola vines that choked the back of the palace, and have a leisurely hour with her husband and 3 natural-born children. Zandra, Emmeline, and Benedict were aged 7, 5, and 3 respectively, the only naturally conceived children she and Edward had produced. Their first 5 offspring had been gestated in exo-wombs after the zygotes had been carefully geneered to the latest physiological pinnacle, which the Kulu geneticists had achieved. It was the Saldanha family way, incorporating the freshest advances into each new generation, or at least that part of it destined to actually hold high office. Always the elder children, following the old earth European aristocratic tradition. Kirsten's first 5 children would probably live for around 200 years, whereas she herself, and the natural-born 3, could only hope for about 180 years. She had been 66 in 2606 when she was crowned in Atherstone Cathedral, 2 months after her brother, Alistair II, had assumed the throne on Kulu. As the 9th child, she had always been destined, barring an accident among her older brothers and sister, to rule Ombé, the newest principality. Like all her 9 exo-womb siblings and the 5 natural-born children of her mother and father, she was tall and physically robust. Geneering gave her dark red hair and an oval face with well-rounded cheeks, and of course a thin nose with a tip that curved down. But Geneering could only provide the physical stamina necessary for the stresses resulting in a century of wielding the supreme authority vested in a reigning monarch. She had been in training for the intellectual challenge from birth, first loaded up with theory, endless politics and economics and management didactic courses, then 5 years at Nova Kong University learning how to apply them. After serving a 12-year naval commission, compulsory for all senior Saldanhas, she was given divisional management positions in the Kulu Corporation, the massive kingdom-wide utilities, transport, engineering, energy and mining conglomerate founded by Richard Saldanha when he settled Kulu, and still owned solely by the king, graduating up to junior cabinet posts. It was a career designed with the sole intent of giving her unrivalled experience on the nature and the use of power for when she came to the throne. Only the siblings of the reigning monarch ruled the kingdom's principalities on his behalf, keeping the family in direct command. The hierarchy was long established and extraordinarily successful in binding together 9 star systems which were physically spread over hundreds of light-years. The only time it ever came near to failure was when Crown Prince Michael germinated tranquility, and the Saldanha family would never let anything like that happen again. Kirsten came out onto the balcony the morning after the Ekwan's arrival, feeling distinctly edgy. Time Universe had been triumphantly broadcasting its Latin exclusive since yesterday evening. She had given the news programs a quick scan after she woke, and the deluge hadn't yet abated. Speculation over the Ekwan and Guyana's Code 2 alert was red hot. For the first time since her coronation, she found herself considering censorship as an option for calming the mounting media hysteria. Certainly there would have to be some sort of official statement before the day was over. She pushed up the voluminous sleeves of her rising robe and looked out over the superb lawns with their mixture of terrestrial and xenoc flowerbeds, and the artificial lakes graced by black swans.